Good morning and welcome back to Nachyomi. Today we're going to be focusing on Yechezkel, Perek Ches, the 8th chapter of Sefer Yechezkel. This Perek is about Yechezkel's journey to Yerushalayim. How does this happen? What is going on over here? So Yechezkel describes in pretty explicit terms. There are already three sections to the Perek, and the first section starts from Pasuk Aleph all the way through Pasuk Vav, where Yechezkel describes it's in the 6th year, on the 6th of the 5th month, and he's in his house, he's consulting with the Ziknei Yehuda, the elders of Yehuda, and Hashem, so to speak, overcomes him. He goes into a prophetic trance, and he sees this celestial being, this figure of Eish. It's a very complicated description of fire, of Chashmal, Zohar, which he's seeing. And he takes Yechezkel in his dream by Yechezkel's hair. So he drags Yechezkel and brings him across the land. Remember, Yechezkel's living in Bavel, in Babylon. And he brings him to the to Yerushalayim. B'maros Elokim El Pesach Shara Pnimis Aponet Safon. So he's turning to facing the north gate of the Beis Hamikdash. And there is Seimel Hakino Hamakne. There is a symbol of Kino Hamakne, which sounds like some sort of deity, it sounds like some sort of image, some sort of Kino literally means jealousy, some sort of dangerous force or image is there. And Hashem is there, and he describes how he sees the same sort of description of Hashem as he did in the valley, which is sort of this expression of the Ma'ase Merkava, of this celestial description of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this area. And he sees this kina in the entering gates of the Beis Hamikdash, the Semel. And Hashem says to him, "You see what they're doing? You see all the disgusting things they're doing? L'roch kol me'al mikdashi, to distance me from my mikdash. Well, there's more." And he pushes in further. Then he goes into the next step of the nevuah. The next step of the nevuah runs for the next yipsukim from Pasuk Zion to Yudalad, where he shows Yechezkel a chor echod bakir, a small hole in the wall, and he says, "Dig into that hole." And he digs into this hole, and he finds in the hole is an entranceway, and behind the entrance are all these inscriptions. These are inscriptions to Avodah Zarah. There's Tavnis, Remes, Behemo, Sheketz, pictures of animals and creepy crawlies are there. The whole Gilulei Beis Yisrael, Mechukei Al Akir, Saviv Saviv, and around this wall are all these images, these graven images that they're serving. And there are 70 of Bnei Yisrael, they're standing, each person sacrificing to these images. And then again Hashem turns to him and says to him, "Hara'isa ben Adam asher ziknei Beis Yisrael asim b'choshech?" You see what they're doing in the darkness? Look what they're doing hiding in the homes. They say, "Ein Hashem roe osanu." Hashem doesn't see us. Hashem has left us so we can serve whatever we want. When he talks about how he goes to the entrance and he sees the Pesach Hashar, the entrance, on the northern entrance, he sees Shoma Noshim Yoshvois Mavakos Ala Tammuz. The woman crying over Tammuz. Another description here. And finally, the last section of the Perek, and we're going to get to some details in a moment, is from Tezvav to the very end. It's a short Perek of Yud Ches, the last four Psukim, where he is taken again in this vision to see in the Chatzar HaPnimis, in the Azara, in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, and there are people who are standing, about 25 men, Achoreim Eleich Hashem, their backs are towards the temple, Upneim Kedmon, they're facing the sun, the east where the sun is, and Mishtachim Kedmon Hashemesh, they're bowing to the sun. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, after showing all of this, says, "Look at the whole land. Look what it's full of. Look at the anger they're making in my land." He says, "Ani e'ase b'chema, v'lo t'achus eini v'lo yachmol." I'm not going to have any mercy on these people. That's the Perek. So let's just think about this. It seems like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is showing Yechezkel the liability of these people. He's showing them, showing Yechezkel why it is that they're deserving of the imminent destruction they talked about in Perek Zion. But let's try to understand some of the details. So first of all, you notice a few interesting things in this parak. First of all, Yechezkel is very precise about when he sees Nevuahs. He tells us exactly, 6th year, 5th month, 6th day of the 5th month. Why is he so precise? So the Chomas Anach, which is the Chidah, quotes the Ma'ari Kra. Ma'ari Kra was one of the Rishonim, Rav Yosef Kara, not to be confused with Rav Yosef Karo, later on in the 1500s. The Ma'ari Kra is one of the preeminent Meforshim on Tanakh, on many of the Mikra'os Gedolos on the page, and he says that it's because Yechezkel treasured his prophecy so much because it was intermittent in the Gola. Yechezkel was not able to access prophecy any time at all times, like in Israel. It was intermittent signals, so to speak, And so when he received it, it was so precious to him. He was very cognizant. He knew exactly where he was. He knew exactly when it was. That's why he's precise about it. Now, 6 years from what exactly? When is the 6 year? So most of the Mepharshim say it was from the time that he went into Galus. Remember, he was exiled with Jehoiachin, and his first prophecy was in the fifth year, in the fourth month. On the fourth of the fifth month, so that was his first prophecy of the celestial, the Maaseh Merkava, and assuming that the next prophecy, as we saw in Perek Beis, was 7 days later, and he had to lie on his side for 430 days, if, as the Seder Olam suggests, there is a Yishanim Uberes, it was an extra leap year, this it leaves us enough time for this next prophecy to happen after his lying on his side. So this is a sequential development. This is later on in the stages. It's now already in the next year. He's finished the first demonstration prophecy of lying on his side and the bread and the brick and the whole business that we saw earlier. Now, isn't this exactly what the Maaseh Merkava is? I mean, he sounds like he's seeing this angel again. Why the angels again? So Malbim says, yes, he is, but he's seeing it from a different perspective. If you notice, the Malbim points out that in the first vision of the chariots, in the first vision of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he saw there was a certain progression. He first saw the Chayos, then the Ofanim, the Kisei, and the Chashmal. So there's a certain progression upwards into the celestial chambers. Here, it's interesting, it's the opposite. He starts off by seeing the Chashmal first, which means to say that Yechezkel, so to speak, climbed the ladder. He's already much further in when it comes to the study. He describes that by Yaakov Avinu, he saw Malachim, Olim v'yordim bo. There are angels who are going up and coming down. Yechezkel's gone up, now he's seeing downwards from the ladder because this is his perspective. Why is Yechezkel being dragged by his hair? It sounds very demeaning. So Radak says, yes, exactly, that's the way it's supposed to be. It's almost like you can imagine, you know, a prisoner in one of those backward countries being dragged because he's guilty, being dragged around to be shown evidence. This is what's happening over here, says the Radak. He's being pulled around because he is being shown. This is what your people do, Yechezkel, being dragged around. Later on, we'll see that he's going to be transported back to Israel for the prophecies of Nechama. And when he's transported then, transported later on, it's going to be placid, it's going to be serene, it's going to be a different expression because that won't be a demonstration of guilt. What is the Seminar Kina? He's seeing this sort of image of Kina in the base of Migdash. So the Malbim says, very simple. What they're doing is that this is actually dualism. Dualism is where you say that there's not just one force in heaven. There are two forces. There's a good force, a bad force. The forces of light, the forces of dark. There's many, many polytheistic religions of old, like Zoroastrianism, as for example, in the Iran area, which the Gemara talks about all the time, was a dualistic religion where there's two forces, forces of evil and forces of good. What they were doing is they realized that there was a lot of kinah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu talks about how he is Makaneh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes precise judgment on people who don't live up to their standards. So what he's saying is that they knew that when the Korbanos were brought, they were brought on the north side of the Mizbeach to appease HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what they said is, no, it's not HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's two things. There's the forces of good on the one side, and then there's the forces of evil which we need to appease. So they were taking what was really truth, an expression of the complexity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they were breaking it up. And it's much easier that way, because now when you appeal to a particular entity, which is not HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's easier to deal with that entity separately from the entity that you have to serve and act up to. Very, very different way of looking at things, and it sort of releases people from a guilt cycle because they don't have to deal with the same, it's not all under the same rubric. There's a bureaucracy. And that's what's happening over here. This is the same Al-Kinah. The Malbim points out that they did not put up a new image in the base of Mikdash because, you know, since the times of Menashe, that was the last time we heard of a graven image being in the temple. But it's clear that philosophically there's a problem here which had not left even when that image went down. What's this hole in the wall? What's going on over here? It sounds like that the Radak says this is really a two-part sign. When they looked into this hole in the wall, he scraped away and he saw these graven images. Number one is it's showing that their Avodah Zorah is under the surface. Much like the times of Yoshio HaMelech when Yirmiyahu started talking, that everybody was saying, yes, yes, we serve our Kodesh Baruch Hu, but in the backs of their doors there were these images. What that means to say is metaphorically is that externally they were all very verfrumt, very, you know, they lived their life in a very particular way, but internally there were all these inconsistencies. But it's also a sign that in the same way, like the walls of Yerushalayim are going to be a small hole which is going to be peeled away, it's going to be peeled away by the enemies too. The hole's going to be enlarged to an entrance as the enemies enter into Yerushalayim. Why is this all here? How does this all come? Now, Malbim says you've got to really look carefully at Pasuk Yud Beis. The reason why this is all happening is because they say, Hashem doesn't see us. Ozav is Hashem is Aretz. There's a deep sense of abandonment. There's a deep sense of lacking of self-image, which leads to all of this, which is why they think when HaKadosh Baruch Hu has abandoned us, then maybe he doesn't see. If he doesn't see, then we can do all the service. We can, you know, hedge our bets by serving other deities as well. What is this, the Vakos ala Tammuz? What does it mean that they're crying over the Tammuz? So Rashi famously tells us there was an angel. Sorry, I apologize. There was a idol which was called the Tammuz, and it had sort of holes by its eyes, and they would pump through water through its eyes, so it looked like it would be crying to be a particular type of service of this deity. The Malbim says, according to the Rambam, and the Radak quotes this, that they would cry over on the Yortzeit, on the day of death of a particular prophet whose name was Tammuz, who was Memune, who was in charge of a star sign, the one of the months of the year, which of course relates to Tammuz. And every day, every year, that day of his death, people would come together to a temple in Babel and cry for him, and this is what Bnei Yisrael were taking place in. And the Chidah points out, this may all be true, that may be the way they're serving it, but let's not forget the background message that in Tammuz was the time that the Beis HaMikdash was breached. The Yerushalayim was breached, and so the beginning of the destruction starts at the point when they're actually doing this. Finally, the Gemara points out a really horrifying point at the end of this chapter. The Gemara in Sukkot of Nun Gimel and Beis tells us that actually, if you look at the Pasuk towards the end of the Perek in Tezayin, as it talks about how they are facing the east and they are looking and they're serving the sun. It wasn't that they're just looking east. It says that they would actually reveal themselves. Rachman Litzlan Umatrizim Klape Mata. They're Porin Atzman. They would actually go to the restroom facing their backs to the temple. What a shocking description over here. This might have been part of the Baal worship, which we know is some way of worshipping the Baal, but it might also be just a sense of disgust with service al Kosh Baruch, which is a real shocking way of thinking about things. And that's why the Gemara says at the end of Sukkah, in Daf Nun Aleph Amud Beis, that on the Simchas Beis HaShoeva they would go around and they would blow trumpets and horns all around the Beis HaMikdash, and they would stop in this point, and they would say, they would quote this Pasuk in Yechezkel, and they would say, you know what? Our ancestors stood here in the first days of Mikdash, and they would do all these terrible, terrible things. Well, we, Einenu, we would say, Onu l'ka, Einenu l'ka. Our eyes and our hearts to you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we are trying to correct that sin. I think what we see from this whole parak is, unfortunately, the real lacking of here, and it's true to today, is that they were leaving a HaKadosh Baruch Hu they didn't understand. They were leaving a Hashem they hadn't fully comprehended. A Hashem who they thought was putative. A Hashem who they thought was limited. A Hashem who they thought needed delegations or separate forces to deal with. And that's the Hashem they were leaving. And this over here is unfortunately HaKadosh Baruch Hu's way of showing Yechezkel. Everything you said is not unfair. Look what they're doing. I'm showing you. It is interesting to note that Yirmiyahu was not shown these things. It's Yechezkel from afar who's being shown behind the scenes. Maybe because Yirmiyahu saw it up front. But Yechezkel is giving over here some of the more shocking aspects which we weren't privy to up to now. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.